funniest, most piddling little families with only five or six children do with themselves.
They're instant priorities. You know you have to protect them and provide for them.
You've given me a massive headache. Teach
your children well. It doesn't take a village to raise a child. It takes an army. And
the hospital made us take it home.
We'll look back on moments like these as the happiest in our lives.
It Takes a Parent with Betsy Hart is brought to you by the Huntington Learning Center of Lake Villa and True North Mortgage Corporation of Arlington Heights. You can meet Betsy's sponsors at betsysblog.com.
Does abstinence education for kids work? The answer, more and more folks are saying, is no. In a new article, a study just out, apparently getting kids to say and even promise that they won't have sex doesn't mean they won't. According to a new study mandated by Congress, kids who took part in sexual abstinence programs were just as likely to be sexually active as kids who didn't. Not only that, they end up having the same number of sexual partners as those who didn't attend the abstinence classes at all. And they had sex for the first time at approximately the same age, hold on to your seat here, 14 years, 9 months on average, so under the age of 15. You know what? I got to tell you, I don't think the abstinence-only plans are working either. I have to say I'm joining the ranks of the critics on that one. But stay with me to find out why. This is Betsy Hart on It Takes a Parent, AM 1160 WYLL. And I am here on this fine day with my producer and friend Lynn Carlson. Together, we have nine kids. We like to point out that we kind of drive the population control folks completely nuts. And I just kind of think that's part of our job. You know, I also want to remind our listeners that, you know, this is a show for parents whose ultimate goal for their kids is heaven, not Harvard. They go to Harvard on the way to heaven, that's fine. If we reverse that, we've really, really failed them. And that's the context in which I, for one, as a professing evangelical Christian, a parent of four, am beginning to see that these abstinence-only programs don't work. I mean, you know, not only I'm buying a lot of the evidence that's actually presented in the figures, I'm also looking at a lot of these Just Say No programs where these kids take these pledges and so forth, promising not to have sex, and apparently they do, although some of the studies show that at slightly later ages, but that the vast majority of them will break that pledge. And here's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a culture that is so absolutely saturated in sexuality. I'm seeing a culture that sexualizes even its very, very youngest children. And I do not know how half an hour a week or even half an hour a day in a classroom saying, you know what, the only safe sex is no sex. How is it possibly going to actually combat a culture that in every other message is sexualizing our youth? And a few months ago, I wrote a column about, Lenny, I may have sent this to you when it first came out, because we've been talking about this, and these girls in particular who have these sexualized images. And we actually had experts on abcnews.com. This is one of those stories that I literally almost didn't believe it when I first read it.
Girls Gone Wild?
Yeah, I literally didn't believe it. I thought it was one of those fake stories that sometimes gets planted on the web. So I literally called the original writer about this to confirm the details. And sure enough, and what she'd written is your 14-year-old daughter shows up on MySpace in a bikini. Her 13-year-old friend is wearing a miniskirt that might make Britney Spears blush. Time to panic? Not necessarily, one expert says. These experts argue that while young women may dress and their sexuality may be more overt than they have in the past, for the most part, their behavior isn't cause for alarm. It's a necessary step in growing up. There's a difference between posting a picture of yourself in virtual space like MySpace or YouTube or Friendster and posing in provocative clothing in public, said another expert. I mean, there is. And the article goes on to quote yet another expert at Columbia University School of Journalism to say that by dressing provocatively, dancing seductively, and posting salacious photos on social networking sites, young women are trying to accomplish a time-honored goal of adolescence, establishing their independence. I'm just aghast at this, and I'm saying, well, of course the abstinence-only programs don't work or have very limited success, because we've turned over our culture to this sexual behavior that is just everywhere. And I don't know. I mean, I've got four kids. Lenny, your kids, you have a couple who are slightly older than mine. I do not know how to get around the culture. I do know what I need to do in my own home. But the culture itself is really scary.
It is scary. And it's really impossible to keep it from invading your home.
Right, right, right.
So I think really the issue is, I can't avoid it unless I'm going to live in a bubble.
Yeah.
So how do I cope with it?
Well, here's as I have thought through that, it does seem to me that we first have to say, you know what? It really does take a parent. It really does take a parent who's willing to approach their kids on these issues. But I also see, you know, in the Christian community, and something I've kind of criticized a little bit, there is a sense of us versus them. You know, if I can just keep this stuff out of my home, well, then I'm safe and I'm righteous and I'm good. And I can keep it out of the computer, off the TV set, and then I keep my children righteous. I think it helps to understand that sin comes from the heart. We can behave in ways that are outwardly, like the Pharisees, very righteous, and wear long-skirted dresses and only watch G-rated movies and keep the internet out of our home. And if our children's hearts are corrupt and greedy and lascivious, we haven't solved any problems. In fact, we might have created some, because then they sort of think, okay, I'm good.
That's right.
If we get that sin is in the heart and that all sin springs from the heart, well, then we kind of know what the source of the problem is. And the practical application for that I'm getting to would be, I'm thinking about these billboards. You've seen them, right? Do you, the one on the side of the road that advertise the toys and the gentlemen's clubs and all that garbage? I hate that they're there. I would take them down if I could, but I can't. But what I can do is, when we're going by those things, maybe is to kind of say to my kids, you know, when it comes up in conversation, it's not just, okay, don't look at those. Or if the image gets past the filter on my computer at home.
Or let's not talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. And just say, we're not going to look at it. We're not going to talk about it. Turn your head. You know, that might be a fine thing. But I think what's better is to communicate to our kids, you know what, honey? How sad that God's gift of sexuality is being demeaned in that way. That's degrading. So it's not just avoiding it, don't look at it. It's teaching them, when they do see it, how to respond rightly and how to think through God's plan for sexuality, and being willing to talk to our kids and to say, you know what, anything outside of marriage is not good enough for you.
But that's exhausting, Beth.
Yeah,
I mean, what you're really
right.
telling all of us is, because there's almost not a moment in the day where we don't need to take something that they're being bombarded with and show them, frankly, how to think rightly about it, because really what they're being fed, I mean, just take, you know, the popular TV shows, you know, like Friends, where, you know,
oh, everybody's sleeping around.
Oh,
yeah.
And they're beautiful and they dress cool and they're living really fun lives. There's no ramifications
Right. And, you know, on the other hand, I was never a Friends fan, but I was a big Seinfeld fan, for instance. And I think Seinfeld is hysterical and it's funny and I enjoy it and it's all great. And I think it's okay to say, even in really secular sources, there are really good and funny things. I mean, all truth is God's truth. A lot of the Proverbs, for instance, came from pagan Egyptian literature. Okay, so let's not just say, oh, we just can't look at any of that. You know, there's pearls of neat things to be found everywhere, even in Seinfeld.
Oh, Larry David is a comedic genius.
Right. So let's just say he doesn't know that he's, you know, honoring God with his humor, but he is. But nonetheless, we have to talk to our kids about this and just say, that kind of stuff, it isn't right. It doesn't honor God, but it's also, it's not good enough for them. And what drives me insane, Lynn.
Well, and wouldn't you also agree, there's not a show that would be appropriate for young children.
Right. Oh, yeah. Sure. I'm absolutely not saying that. I mean, I'm not saying it is. But I'm also saying that I, as an adult, I'm not going to necessarily not engage in the culture or even tell my kids, you know, they know I love Rod Stewart, for instance. And I think it's okay for me to say to them, you know, Rod Stewart doesn't know that he's honoring God with that voice, but he is, because that was a gift given to him. Because he doesn't get where it came from and how to honor God with it doesn't mean it's not a gift.
It doesn't mean that it can't be, you can't enjoy it in your
exactly.
life.
Exactly. And see it for the gift that it is, even if he doesn't. Now, some people will disagree with me about Rod Stewart's voice being a gift, but that's a subject for another show. In any event, these kids have to be able to have that conversation with us where we can say to them, don't be afraid of the culture, learn to think rightly about it. But what I was going to say is, what drives me crazy with when it comes to the sexuality, particularly of young girls, is that, come on, 15-year-old girls are not interested in the full-out sexual act. They're interested in being told they're beautiful and loved and kissed and that kind of thing. And when we abandon our girls to this idea that they have to behave like the boys? What is that? I thought feminism was supposed to come along and help
empower us.
Instead, we have women being far more sexualized than they ever were in the worst of the bunny, the Playboy bunny mansion days.
Right, right. No, you're absolutely right. They're just 14-year-old girls, I think almost across the board, are not interested in being sexually active. They are being coerced, enforced, I think, into...
And our adult culture, these people, these idiots in this article, who these experts being quoted from Columbia, from prominent schools...
Who say it's okay
to dress provocatively.
It's
a good thing. It's a sign of your independence. When we have
high self-esteem. Yeah,
when we have people like this out in the culture who are willing to sell our daughters out and to essentially say to them, you've got to be a sexy babe and behave with the sex drive of the male counterparts... That is insane to me. It is selling out our girls. It is minimizing their agency as human beings, their dignity. And I am just sick to death of these experts trying to convince me that 15-year-old girls really want to be out there having sex, because they don't. And if we don't empower them to say no and to be who they really are and to encourage them in Christ, for those of us who have Christian homes, then we are just totally selling out these poor girls, and we're putting them in miniskirts on MySpace and saying, well, that's what you should be doing. Oh, and by the way, go to this abstinence-only class, and gee, I guess it's, you know, maybe
Well, but the abstinence-only programs weren't able to touch upon God's law.
Of course not. Of course not.
So they missed, you know, they had to teach the class with essentially one hand tied behind their back.
Well, and keep in mind, a lot of people teaching them have no interest in teaching these classes. They certainly don't have any interest in talking about God's principles. But those who do, you're right, cannot bring it up. But even if they could, because there are a lot of these great programs that are Christ-oriented, that talk about, you know, making a pledge and just saying no and all of that good stuff. But in one way, I have some concerns about that, again, because I think it does almost focus a little bit too much on the sexual act and on the outside status of whether or not you've had it or engaged in it. So I wonder if in some ways it gets people thinking about it in a way we don't want them to be. But on the other hand, you know, again, we're just living in this sex-soaked culture, and I think a lot of parents are afraid to talk to their kids about it. They're afraid to help them think rightly and clearly about it and to communicate to them that sex outside of marriage is not good enough for them. But, you know, I remember, Lenny, a couple of years ago, this very young friend of mine was getting married, and her mother came into our home where we were having a little party for them, her mother-in-law, her new mother-in-law. And she was telling me, oh, I was so happy when I found out so-and-so, her son's new wife, was a virgin. And I kind of thought, oh, my gosh, that's not information I ever want to have about my children's intendeds. And I think there was a little bit too much of an emphasis on the status of virginity versus what was really going on in the heart. Now, this happened to be a great girl. But what if she'd been a virgin? But a really nasty girl, you do set up this kind of pharisaical standard, I think. So I'm just... Again, it goes back to, I think, teaching our kids that it's what goes on from the heart. Sin comes from the heart. It is about what's going on in the heart. Nothing from the outside can cause us to sin. So let's think in terms of helping our kids think through that. What does that mean on a regular basis when they see the billboards or they see the images or they're presented with, you know, something unwholesome?
But it really is so difficult, though, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to ferret out these statistics and say what's causing these kids to behave that way. I mean, is it possible that, you know, they're being taught, okay, abstinence is one option, and the kids kind of, you know, they're being taught, okay, it's a foolproof pregnancy avoidance and sexually transmitted disease. You're going to avoid that. And the kid says, okay, well, you know, condoms are about 95%. Pretty good for
risk me. Risk-benefit analysis.
You know what? These kids are pretty savvy, I think, when it comes to this. And then they're being taught, well, kids, you know, there's psychological issues regarding having premarital sex. And the kid says, I'm not going to fall victim to that.
Right.
Johnny really cares about me. He's never going to hurt me. Kids, you have your reputation to think about. Oh, but Johnny's not going to talk about me in the locker room.
Well, you're right. I mean, Lenny, you're right. So part of it, and this does go to kids who cannot think rightly and make good executive decisions, and they're more likely to take risks. We're going to talk about a study on that. But, you know, I think what we're coming down to is whatever is going on in the schools or even in the culture, it takes a parent in the home being willing to spend time with their kids, help their kids think rightly about these things, teach their children that it's not just enough to stay away from certain activities or images. that when those things come into their lives, they have to think about them rightly and respond to them in a way that isn't afraid of the world, but wants to engage the world as God would have us in a way that's wholesome and good. And I just think so many of us parents, and this one included, too often falls down in that job. But this, I think this report can be something that maybe is a little bit of a call to action.
Well, it would be interesting to know if some of the kids who've been in these abstinence programs, if their parents are actually less likely to talk to them about that because they thought it was being handled by the experts.
Great point. Because once again, yeah, the experts, we want to always turn that over to the experts. And that's scary. Can't do that when it comes to kids. But we can't ask you to stay with us. This is Betsy Hart, and It Takes a Parent, AM 1160 WYLL. Come right back. We're going to talk about how families can build time together, and we hope you'll join us.
When your child says,
"Why do I need to learn this?"
The truth is,
"I don't understand it."
When your child says,
"I don't like school."
The truth is,
"Everybody reads better than I do."
When your child says,
"Who cares about college?"
The truth is,
"I have bad grades."
Recognize the signs. Call Huntington Learning Center at 1-800-CAN-LEARN to help your child do better in school. The truth is, Huntington can help. Your child can learn. Call now, 1-800-CAN-LEARN.
Huntington Learning Center is now open in Lake Villa. During the month of May, get a $200 evaluation for your child for only $75. Plus, meet firsthand the teachers and tools that Huntington Learning Center uses to help each student succeed in school. The $75 evaluation is only valid at the Huntington Learning Center of Lake Villa. Call 800-CAN-LEARN to make your appointment today. That's 800-CAN-LEARN. Huntington Learning Center of Lake Villa on the southwest corner of Deep Lake Road and Grass Lake Road in the Tower Lakes Crossing Strip Mall.
Equal Housing Lender, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee.
True North Mortgage, providing direction in residential financing.
From the beginning of my application inquiry through and beyond the closing, True North Mortgage was there with me, answering all my questions and concerns.
True North Mortgage, 30 years experience providing direction in residential financing.
They analyzed my particular life situation and provided me with a lending choice that made the most sense for me, giving me peace of mind well after the closing.
You don't want to regret your mortgage decision. It's a long-term commitment. True North Mortgage will give you direction and they'll help you save time and money by shopping for the most competitive rate for your lending needs. True North has access to 250 different national lenders, and for a limited time, True North will provide WYLL listeners with free appraisals. At closing, up to a $250 credit will be given to cover the appraisal fee. Call Gene or Leslie at 847-621-3800. That's 847-621-3800.
Welcome back to It Takes a Parent with Betsy Hart. I'm here in studio with my producer and good friend, Lyd Carlson. And we are talking about all kinds of things having to do with kids together. We've got 9. So hopefully we have a little bit of something to say about that, or at least a little bit of a way to fake it. If you'd like to find out more about me or about the show, please visit me at betsysblog.com. And in fact, we have a winner for last week's contest. Suzanne won the gift certificate to Zika's Nails in Western Springs. Suzanne, congratulations. I will give you a spot to post your address to me so we can get that off to you from the studio here. And Suzanne had a great response to why do you deserve a pedicure. And she said, "I'm 50 years old and I've never had one. And I'm eager to have a chance."
Oh,
so we're glad.
She's going to pamper herself.
Oh, I am. She deserves it, too, from the entry she wrote to me. And you can see that on betsysblog.com. So, Suzanne, congratulations. Well, folks, you listen to It Takes a Parent on AM 1160 WYLL. We've been talking about abstinence education. Can it work in a culture that is utterly sex-soaked? And what's going on with these kids? And how can we as parents communicate effectively to them on this and on a host of other issues? This is just one of many things in which we Christian parents have to combat the culture. But, you know, Lenny, I was also thinking as we went to break that a lot of what's happening with these kids is they are seeing these behaviors in the adult community, and not just the ones on Friends or Seinfeld. They're seeing a lot of single parents and a lot of you know, adults in their own lives modeling this kind of behavior. So, you know, for a lot of people, it really does have to start with the parents not just saying the right thing, but frankly, behaving well.
You mean we have to be role models?
I'm afraid so, Lynn. I don't see we get out of that one. And here's more reason to do it, because there's a study out that says what, you know, like we didn't know this with 9 kids between us, that kids are, especially teenagers, are more likely to take risks. I mean, I'm almost laughing because it's just, you know, a big duh. They are, their brains are wired to make, to take risks. So he says that for most of these educational efforts to persuade kids to not smoke or not use drugs or alcohol, this is in Newswise where the report was found, they've not been effective because there's a great deal of research on adolescent brain development that sheds light on why kids engage in risky and dangerous behavior. And it is a function of the brain not being fully developed until well into the 20s. So again, it goes back to some of these parents thinking their kids have this inherent wisdom. Well, if they do, it sure doesn't manifest itself during the teen years in most cases.
What's coming to mind is some wisdom from Bill Cosby. Before we had to all be politically correct, and he used to call kids brain damaged.
Right.
Now, apparently, the neuroscientists are saying he was right on.
Now, the MRI studies are telling us, yeah, it was great. Actually, I love Bill Cosby. He's been right about so many things. But that's just exactly right. A lot of parents get this or used to. Then we came to a point where we have to sort of say, well, there's sort of so wise and intuitive and so forth. We need to listen more to the children. It turns out the children need to listen more to mom and dad, and that's God's protection for them. That's why we're there, because their brains are not even physically fully developed.
Well, and isn't it also possibly saying to us that actually a lot of the education that we might do to them and the talking that we might do in educating them, actually, they're not going to understand rightly because, in fact, their brains are not matured in cognitive ways. But we need to set up rules and regulations to keep them safe so that they will then understand our wisdom possibly years later.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, we were talking about things along this line last week, which is, you know, I'd like my kids to like me when they're 13. That would be nice. But it's not a goal I have. I want my kids to like me when they're 30.
Because many times you're going to tell them things for their own good, and they are not going to understand it.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah, newsflash, this just in.
I was at a cocktail party the other day, and I had some, you know, we were talking about kids, and someone said, well, don't you trust your kids? And honestly, I, you know, what was happening in my brain very quickly was, how well do they know these people, and can I answer this honestly? Because the God's honest truth was, no.
So what did you say?
It was a total conversation kill. But I did. I just said no. But now I can say no, and the neuroscientists have backed me up on that.
Yeah, excellent. So were they shocked by this?
They were shocked. They were frankly a little shocked that I just said no.
Oh, good for you, Lynn. Good for you, Lynn.
And I didn't mean that in any disrespectful way to my children.
Uh-huh.
I just think it's prudent for me on several issues not to trust them. I was a teen, too.
Yeah, we've both been there. In fact, I was a teenager with you. So we've both been there, and it would be wise not to trust them. Well, you know, one of the ways, of course, that parents can build, you know, some of that trust, get to know their kids a little bit better. And I'm not saying build that trust towards their kids. I'm saying allow their children to see them in action and making good decisions on their behalf and saying, I'm going to be a leader in your life and all that good stuff, is to spend family time together. But a news report out this week says that, guess what? So more and more families are saying the one place we're not going to spend time together is in church. And if soccer or anything else conflicts with Sunday morning worship, then we're going to skip that and we're going to just go to the activity. Church is becoming more and more one of many activities on the list.
Well, and sports are growing and growing and growing. I mean, the sports programs now, in the amount of time that they expect you to be there with your children, it's not like when we were kids.
No, it's so much more extensive now, and sports are great. But there is, if you talk to any pastor, and that's what this this article talked about this week. It was out of Nashville, Tennessee, in the BP Press. It talks about that you just cannot. You know, more and more pastors will tell you that on Sunday mornings they're up against not just sports, but they're up against even, you know, scout meetings and pancake breakfast and all kinds of things. And parents are choosing to do these other activities instead of where I think we really need to be as a family in church on Sunday morning. But as you and I were talking about this, I think one of the problems is that the church also splits up families on Sunday morning. So they get
some
there.
Some churches do,
Some
yes.
churches do. They're going in so many different directions. They don't give parents a chance to make the church something that they really can do together, because they walk in the door, the kids go one way, the parents do another. What I'm finding I'm really encouraged about is that more and more churches, and I've been speaking to some about this, more and more churches are beginning to get how important it is to allow that time on Sunday morning to allow some aspect of it.
Unrushed time that families can really bond together in one place.
Yeah, and worship together. And they're finding ways to do that. And I really think that the more churches get on that bandwagon, been off it for about 30 years, but the more they get back to the point where they are really finding ways for families to worship together, the less conflict they're going to have with some of these outside organizations. Well, we have to go. This is Betsy Hart on It Takes a Parent here in Studio AM 1160 WYLL. We thank you to our sponsors, Huntington Learning Center of Lake Villa, True North Mortgage Corporation. Remember, friends, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about these things. Have a great week. Join us next Thursday at 2:00.